Mini-episode 810 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the FDH Lounge / the FantasyDraftHelp.com Insider. We are here as we do every year. It's the 2017 NASCAR season preview. We're doing it in the form of our fantasy mock draft. Rick Morris coming at you with our motorsports editor here at FDH, Mike Petak. A pleasure as always. Thank you for hosting the draft here at your humble abode, Mike. A pleasure as always, my friend.
Good to have you, and welcome to Casa de Petak.
It is always a pleasure to be at the fine Casa de Petak, and we have a lot of interesting things to look forward to with the 2017 season.
It's not going to be boring, I can guarantee you that.
Yes, a lot of rules changes coming into this season here, and I have to say that on the FDH board, we really didn't try to take them into account that much because it's very, very difficult to try to get your arms around that. Yes, I guess you could say drivers that have shown more consistency the last couple of years are more poised to do well in this format, but it's going to change the behavioral patterns of drivers who didn't race as aggressively and who kind of hung back. And you and I talked about this a little bit off air, where I think this could really kind of verge into irresponsibility is when you start getting into the restrictor plate tracks like Talladega, and that a lot of times drivers hang back, and that keeps bad situations from being worse. But this whole thing here of we want everyone to be aggressive at all costs, I do sort of fear what the human toll of that thing might be, Mike, that based on everybody being incentivized to be super aggressive no matter what.
I agree, and I think really the best thing to do would be just to get rid of the restrictor plates and may the best man win. But that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
That's probably the safest thing to do.
I've heard that theory before. That's very interesting, and you know more about this than I do, certainly. But, yeah, it has some real logic to it. I know that, again, you and I are doing the mock draft. I am also drafting for FDH Lounge dignitary Nate Noy. He wants to go right off of the FDH draft board, so we're doing that. And I have lists from our fellow FDH Lounge dignitaries, Matt Patrone and Anthony Patrone. Matt, our defending champion. Anthony, who finished in last place a year ago, so the Patrones bookended us on this thing here. Just had to get that in there. It's obligatory.
What's up, Patrones?
Yes, and Anthony, I will say this.
I like your tequila.
I go back to this thing a couple of years ago when we got together when we were doing, it was a Pantheon segment, and it is a large group of FDH Lounge dignitaries, so some of these guys have never met some of these other guys. And Tim Faust, one of our original dignitaries that we don't get together with that much anymore, he happened to be there. And the Patrones really weren't kind of on his radar. So when he was asking me who was likely to be joining us that day, I rattled off the names, and he said, the Patrone Brothers, is that a nickname based on drinking? I said, well, if it was based on the classiness of their drinking, they'd be the Smirnoff Brothers. But Anthony Patrone did try to take this into account on his draft board. And I, again, I take my hat off to him. That's more than I was willing to try to do because you could be more accurate if you try to anticipate. And, of course, the major things we're talking about here this year, dividing up every race into three stages, awarding points to the winners of every stage, as well as, obviously, points for winning the race itself. And winning the race itself is always going to be the most important thing here points-wise. But changing up the points, trying to, again, incentivize drivers to be more proactive, more towards the front of the pack. Don't hang back there as much because each stage is only a third of the race, and you got to be up there to try to make any hay for that to be a situation, to try to be competitive all the time. And quite frankly, to try to hook in the TV audience a little bit more. And the NASCAR people were very forthright about admitting that when they unveiled the new system and basically said, this was their analysis, that, you know, hockey has three periods, football and basketball have four quarters. This is a way of sort of dividing it up here so that people can tune in and catch parts of it. It almost sounds a little bit kind of defeatist on the whole thing of like, well, you're not convincing people to sit through your entire race based on the ratings. So it sounds like they're sort of taking what they can get if people want to take a more piecemeal approach and say, I'll watch this stage of this race.
Yeah, agreed. And they're also making some points races at Daytona other than the 500.
That's right. That's right. Making that part of the whole system here. So Speed Week's going to factor into this as well. And again, on our system, we go off of the NASCAR points every year, and then, again, incentives for drivers who finish in the top five of the standings a year ago. And Matt, again, did very well with his picks last year, and he was very fortunate to draw the number one pick. We did a draw off air here. So the order that we're going, six-round serpentine draft, as we generally do. Matt is number one. You're picking second. Mike, Anthony Patrone is third. I, Rick Morris, am fourth. Nate Noy is fifth. So we'll make those picks. We'll circle back around. And we were able to get as far as the order of this thing goes, because I'm going off of lists from Matt and Anthony, and myself going off of the FDH draft board, as is Nate Noy. You happen to let me know what your preference would be in the first round. We're already eight picks into this thing before we even turn the mics on, so we're off to a running start here. We can kind of analyze where we're going and get your thoughts. And certainly, you want to check out people, because Mike's thoughts from this always factor in very heavily every year. 2017 Fantasy Racing Draftology, you can find that pretty shortly up on fantasydrafthelp.com. So we will be sort of encapsulating some of Mike's thoughts on the drivers as we go through here, taking that in the form of his notes for that. The first driver to go off of the board was Matt Patrone, taking Jimmy Johnson number one. In a way that is, for a lot of people, maybe from a more casual perspective, and I don't mean to be insulting because Matt is anything but casual. He's our defending champion. But a lot of people would just say, well, duh, he's the chalk pick. He won it a year ago. But 10th in 2015 in the standings, 11th in 2014. When you start looking at the other numbers that you can find on the FDH draft board by track type, it really kind of gets a little bit more thin from there. Only 8th on the intermediate courses a year ago, as far as average finish. We're taking average finish for all of these. 18th on the restrictor plates, first on the short tracks, not in the top 20 for finishes on the super speedways and on the road races. So Jimmy Johnson is a strong candidate. He's always going to be there at the end. Clearly, Matt is gambling heavily on getting a first or second place bonus from him, because if you're just looking at it through the course of a season, 2015 and 2014 tell the case. That's sort of the worst-case scenario for him, in which case this pick would be a flop. So it sort of seems like for a guy who's money, for who's won this as many times as he has, he's still kind of high-risk, high-reward at number one, is he not?
He is, but again, you know, Jimmy Johnson is just clutch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he always is going to find his way in the end, but it's everything leading up to that.
Right.
You know, he was not a chalk number one seed going into, you know, the chase last year,
mm-hmm.
but he won it. And, you know, you can't fault Matt for saying, look, I want the defending champ number one.
Right. Yeah, I can't fault that at all. I mean, that's a strong pick for what he brings to you, for his chance to close it out in the end there, and we shall see.
He definitely knows how to win.
He certainly does. Now, for you, Mike, the second pick overall, I was a little bit kind of disappointed because I looked at Anthony's draft board and I knew that this guy was going to slip to me if he slipped past you, but it didn't happen. You're going with the number one guy on the FDH draft board this year, unsurprisingly.
Kyle Busch.
Yeah.
Something, you're talking about somebody who drives aggressively?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that Kyle Busch is just that guy. Now we'll see how this, you know, again with the new point system, how this is all going to work, but the guy just knows how to win races.
He does.
And wins are the most important thing. And, you know, taking Kyle Busch at number two, it was not even a second thought when I saw Jimmy Johnson went off the board at number one.
I can understand that. He finished third a year ago, so he was right up there. He raced last year as the defending champion from 2015. He finished 10th in 2014, fourth on the intermediate tracks last year. And that's the most important one because that's two-thirds of the races right there. It's most important that you can hit those ones well. From there, first on the restrictor plates, 14th on the short tracks, third on the super speedways, fourth on the road races, more than most other drivers, he was strong across the board, Mike.
Very much so. Very much so. And coming up, coming back off that injury, and, you know, it just being aggressive is in his nature. So hopefully this plays in right into his wheelhouse.
We'll see how it goes, because the third pick here, Anthony Patrone gets the guy who's number one on his draft board. He was actually number nine on the FDH draft board. And again, the top nine drivers or so are bunched up pretty well. We have a cutoff after the top five and then a cutoff after nine. So Truex is going to go this high in some drafts this year. Martin Truex, the pick. Anthony is looking for a breakthrough for him. Driver who finished 11th a year ago, fourth in 2015, did not make the chase in 2014 with a 24th place finish. And again, on different track types last year, was really kind of hit or miss. He was 11th on the intermediate course races, 16th on the restrictor plates, 8th on the short tracks, 18th on the super speedways, and 3rd on the road races. So he's a guy where Anthony put him first. I talked about this, that his draft board prioritizes consistency and drivers that he sees as not having to make very big adjustments to the new rules based on how they've done it before. So from Anthony's perspective, Martin Truex is a driver who is set up to win his first championship here under new rules that really kind of suit him.
Martin Truex, you know, would I have taken him at number three? No. Do I like Martin Truex as a driver? Absolutely, 100%. Looking at ahead, you know, Anthony is taking up my mantra of team upside.
Yeah.
You know, they're working with Gibbs Racing, and I think that's what really helped out Truex last year a lot. So, you know, again, you know, people like who they like, and he's trying to adjust his draft board to be, you know, with the new rules. We'll see what happens. It's so hard right now.
Mm-hmm.
But do I like Martin Truex as a driver? Absolutely.
Yeah, how do you not? I mean, he's got a lot of upside. And as far as being a relatively young guy still who hasn't been able to get it done yet, that takes me to my pick, the fourth pick overall. I don't get the top guy on the FDH draft board at number four, but I do get the number two guy, and that is Joey Logano, who, for what it's worth, finished second in UQB last year. Our UQB stat basically takes into account all of the different track types and weighting them proportionately. Where we're kind of fortunate in that regard is that everything is divisible of 36. It's nice the way they have it with the 24 intermediate tracks on down the line. Everything divides into 36, and it makes for some nice clean math. Joey Logano, another driver that was strong across the board last year. He was the runner-up in the series. He was sixth in 2015. He was fourth in 2014. So over a three-year stretch, you're not going to find anybody who's really done it better than him. Sixth on the intermediates last year, second on restrictor plates, tied for third on the short track, second on the super speedways, second on the road races. Joey Logano, I'm the kind of guy here where I like upside as much as the next guy. I might perhaps prefer to be able to get somebody who has done it before, who's won it before, but I'm not in that spot. Like Anthony, I'm gambling that this is going to be the breakthrough year for Joey Logano.
Oh, there's no breakthrough year. He's won plenty of races, plenty of top fives, plenty of top tens. He was the one.
Right.
That if Kyle Busch wasn't there, I would have. And he was still under consideration with Kyle Busch on the board.
Right.
That's how much I like Joey Logano.
Right.
And he works so well with Keselowski as his teammate that I've always kind of been a huge Joey guy ever since he went over to Penske.
Yeah, I can understand that, and your point is very well taken, that when you look at the consistency of the last couple of years, that it is a situation where that kind of plays out the wrong way. It's funny, you're looking here at our sheet. I had made a mistake looking ahead here. I had written down a name twice, so when we get to this with my second-round pick, I guess I apparently returned the favor as far as sniping you.
Oh,
we'll
damn
get,
you.
We'll get to that.
I had like drool coming down my face. I'm like, oh my God. This is so good.
I had a driver written in twice, and I'm glad I caught that before we got to it on air, because it would have been embarrassing. Although, that's actually going to be the next pick here, because that's where Nate is at this point in time. Nate is on the board to end the first round and start the second round. And unsurprisingly, with him going off of the FDH draft board, he sniped me of the guy I wanted. I guess we pass it along here and return the favor. I'm going to snipe you of the guy that you want. He takes Kevin Harvick with his first pick. I actually had Kevin Harvick then written in for myself second round here. So that was where my misprint, not catching that before we turned the mics on, kind of got in the way. Kevin Harvick and then Brad Keselowski are his two picks. So again, a lot of times in a draft like this, serpentine style, you get a team where, particularly with the way it's bunched up at the top, a lot of times, and this is sort of counterintuitively, sometimes the team that drafts at the end of the first round will be in the best spot because, like, the team that drafts first will also be drafting 10th, et cetera, et cetera. The guy drafting 5th and 6th, he gets some value for Harvick and Keselowski here with the 5th and 6th picks overall because we've got them 3rd and 5th on our draft board. So your thoughts on Harvick and Keselowski for Nate?
That's great. I'd love to be in Nate's shoes right now. Those are two solid picks.
Yeah, yeah.
They're both above solid.
They're both very, very consistent. They both know what it means to be a series champion. Harvick was, he actually led the UQB last year, 184 points off of that, and that makes sense because of the strength that he had almost across the board. First on the intermediate tracks, and that is, again, two-thirds of the tracks. You're going to be very high on the UQB when you do well on that. Fourth on the restrictor plate, second on the short tracks, 14th on the super speedways, tied for 17th on the road courses. Keselowski, third on intermediate, ninth restrictor plate, tied for 6th short track, 11th super speedway, tied for 5th on the road courses. And in the point standings, Harvick, 8th, 2nd, and 1st the last couple of years. The last 3 years for Keselowski, 12th, 7th, and 5th. Two guys who, again, strong across the board and have that winning experience that, like I said, all things being equal, I would have liked to have had with my first pick here. It didn't work out that way, but Nate gets two guys who have been in the winner's circle at the end of the season.
Yep, great, you know, two great picks. I mean, that's just shows you the depth that we have at the top of the draft.
That's right. That's right. To be able to get two guys in there like that. That brings me to the second pick of the second round. That was where I ended up taking Matt Kenseth because, again, like a moron, I had Kevin Harvick written down for myself, even though I wrote it down for Nate. And then as I'm crossing out Harvick, that was what led to that spontaneous moment here on air a minute ago here when you saw me writing down Kenseth. I end up snaking you with that pick. Kenseth, a guy who finished 5th last year, 15th in 2015, 7th in 2014. On the UQB last year, he was 7th with 134 points. That's indicative of 2nd on the intermediate tracks. Again, very important right there. 11th on the restrictor plate courses, not in the top 20 short tracks or super speedways, but again, short tracks only account for 6 races, super speedways account for 4. He was 13th on the road track races last year, albeit, again, that's only 2 races. So a guy who in 30 of the 36 races last year was top 11 or better as far as average finish. And again, he was 2nd on the 24 races collectively that formed the intermediate tracks and 11th on the 6 restrictor plate courses. So he's strong in the areas where he needed to be strong the most.
Just call him Mr. Consistency.
Yep.
That's, you know, Matty Ice,
mm-hmm.
not the quarterback for the Falcons.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the driver of the number 20 car, just Mr. Consistency. Smart driver. He doesn't take any crazy risks out there. And he just finds his way to the front of the pack.
And strangely enough, albeit in ways that I don't think he would necessarily find flattering, but one of the most influential athletes of the 21st century. Because you go back to, what was it, I think 2003 when he won, and it was deemed to be so boring by NASCAR and the way that it happened. His boring kind of march, his anticlimactic march to the title was why we got the chase. And then other sports start imitating it. You get the FedEx Cup in golf. You get NHRA doing the same thing here. NASCAR has tweaked it multiple times, not least of which, again, this year, as we talked about here. So it all came from the dawn of that back in 2003 and one of the last times that NASCAR was going into a little bit of kind of a panic, like, what are we going to do? We got to juice it up a little bit more. The lasting legacy of Matt Kenseth, ladies and gentlemen, maybe not the one that he prefers.
Probably not even close. He'll be remembered for that and his love of Brad Keselowski.
Yes, yes. And they end up not going to the same team here. We end up not getting the chemistry in our fantasy draft with those guys. But we catch up now to everything we were able to write down off air based on the lists that we have here. So the last one that I have written in as we're speaking right now, Anthony Patrone getting the guy who was number 3 on his draft board, getting the guy who was number 11 on the FDH draft board. You talk about team upside. Anthony is doubling down on that like a mofo. Chase Elliott, who was 11th, I'm sorry, he was 10th in the standings last year. Was a Chase competitor in his first time of going out there for real and getting it done. He was 13th on the UQB with 89 points in that, and kind of a mixed bag. 10th on the intermediate tracks, not in the top 20 on restrictor plate tracks, tied for 10th on the short tracks, tied for 19th on the super speedways, tied for 14th on the road tracks. Chase Elliott is a guy who, again, has a world of promise, has that incredible lineage, the bloodlines, and again, along with Martin Truex, team upside probably more so than anybody we've seen to this point.
Absolutely. He does have the bloodline, and he performed very well driving the 24 car last year for the very first time in what's now Monster Energy?
Yes.
So, you know, if Anthony hits on these, he's just, you know, he can run away with the league just with these two picks because, you know, they're both excellent drivers. You know, I think you and I can agree that they're just coming a little early.
But yeah, yeah.
Nothing against the drivers, nothing against Anthony and his picks. Like I says, if he hits, and, you know, there's no reason why they can't.
Well, if Chase Elliott can handle the pressure of driving the number 24 car, then maybe he can handle the pressure of, in yours, in my estimation, maybe being overdrafted a little bit here in the number 8 spot overall. Again, 3rd on Anthony's draft board. So Anthony got the 1st and 3rd guys on his list, and he was really trying to take this into account more than anybody as far as anticipating the rules here this year. If he gambled correctly in slanting his board that way, he's going to be in great shape, and he's going to be the team to beat if he was right because he's putting his money where his mouth is.
Absolutely,
so
yes.
It's very funny because we talk about this here, you know, the chemistry of two very young guys that Anthony has there, two young upside guys, the chemistry that was missed of Kenseth and Keselowski not going to the same team in the league here. You have a chance for some very interesting chemistry here with your next pick because if you're strictly going off of the FDH board, then I – and we are doing that. Okay.
Yes, we are.
Well, and you know what? It's so funny with you taking Kurt Busch here to go with Kyle Busch because Anthony has said to me, I've told him the joke about the Patrone brothers, the Smirnoff brothers. Well, here's the thing, too. Those guys aren't really into vodka or whatever. They're more so into beer. Anthony has said we would definitely be the Busch brothers if it was based on the classiness of what we imbibe. So instead, you actually get the Busch brothers here. I can't believe I get to tell that Patrone brothers joke in the course of a draft, but such is life. Kurt Busch up next, a guy who was a series champion, albeit a while ago. We've been waiting for number 2 for a while, but he finished 7th last year, 8th in 2015, 12th in 2014. He was 5th on the UQB last year, taking into account the track types. Not surprising when you look at the consistency across the board here. 5th on both intermediate and restrictor plate course finishes last year. 4th on the super speedways, 8th on the road courses, 14th on the 6 short track races last year. A tie for 14th, actually, is about as low as it got. So somebody who was very consistent, who was very strong in those areas here, and again, the chemistry perhaps of getting two brothers here, two guys sharing that bloodline, probably can't be underestimated. So a very, very interesting pick, Mike.
No, not at all. I've always been kind of a Kurt Busch mark. And another the thing about Harvick and Busch is, you know, when they were with Stuart Haas, I believe this is the first year they've gone to Ford.
I think so.
But this is the team that Ford is putting all their money behind. It is what Hendrick is to Chevy. Ford was looking for that young team, that newer team to push their brand.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to put a lot of money and a lot of technology behind this team. And it could take a while for it to come to fruition, or it could be a home run right off the bat.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you kind of don't know how it's going to shake out. And I feel like this is the point in time, because this is where probably for the last 3, 4, 5, 6 years maybe he might go a little bit higher. He probably wouldn't go a little bit lower. But this is right about where Carl Edwards, I think, has gone in our drafts the last couple of years. So there was some real refiguring that had to go on our part late in the game here, and with a lot of people, with him dropping out very, very surprisingly as he did.
Stunning. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I think there's more to it than meets the eye, and maybe someday we'll get that. But, I was really surprised, retiring so young and without a championship.
Right. Yeah, and that's a guy where, and I've brought this up, that he is a guy who I think two different people picked in 2012. One of the things we do with the FDH Lounge is our February 29th time capsule. I'll try to make predictions for when we open up the time capsule the next February 29th. And I think there were two different people who said he will win two NASCAR series titles before February 29th, 2016. And it certainly didn't seem like it was an odd pick at the time. He's one of the guys you would have thought of in that regard for that. Jimmy Johnson, probably the chalk guy, because more of his five titles at the time were more recently in the memory. But he's a guy who seemed like he was just going to do it one of these years, and for whatever reason, it didn't happen. And it's his career is disappointing in that way, albeit he accomplished a lot. But I don't know. I don't know if the expectations were unfair. They often are with a lot of guys. I mean, there are people that will tell you that even LeBron James, when it's all said and done, won't have lived up to everything they thought when he came out of high school. So expectations sometimes are a real bitch, but what do you think it was with Carl Edwards with the course of his career? It's just one of these enigmas, I think.
I don't know. I wonder if it was a pressure thing, because when he left Roush Fenway, he was quote-unquote the face of Ford. He was the face of Ford. Then he went over to Toyota, and, Gibbs had a super team put together there. And, yeah, he was winning races, but he wasn't winning the championships. And I'm wondering if the pressure just got to him.
Very
strange.
Some
people don't handle pressure very well.
Yeah, you don't know how it would have gone. And I will always be curious to know, certainly this is something I'm going to inquire of Matt Patrone after the draft, is where he would have slotted him in, because he ends up making two picks, one in particular that is very much off the FDH board. And I don't know his reasoning. I actually just got his draft board texted to me before showtime here without any kind of explanation as to why he slotted guys where he did. The guy that he's getting, who's number 8 on his draft board, who he is taking with the 10th overall pick at the end of the second round, is 25th, actually, on the FDH draft board, Ty Dillon. So he is going for, you talk about going for young upside, and you talk about how Anthony kind of rolled the dice on Truex and Elliott to the extent that he did. That's nothing compared to Matt taking this risk here with Ty Dillon and hoping it's going to pay off at the end of round two.
Yeah, that's, he could have got him a round later easier,
yeah.
I believe.
Well, he starts off the third round, so I can guarantee you he could have done that.
Well, okay. How about the fourth round?
Fourth round, very possibly. Yeah, I think so. Fourth/fifth.
But here's the thing. If you like a guy and your gut tells you that this is the guy you want and you don't think he's going to be there the next time around, grab him.
Here's the thing, though, and I think you'd agree with me on this. I think you would agree with me as far as approach to this, because you and I both really value the concept of value, which is what we talk about all the time with FantasyDraftHelp.com. If you do it, you better be right. If you're going to go against the grain, you better be right. And this is one of these ones where, again, if it hits, he's going to look like a genius. If it doesn't hit, we're all going to be sitting there going, what was up with that, bro?
Yeah, true. But again, like we've always talked about, if there's a guy out there that you like and you don't think he may be there at the next time around, because he's back at the top of the draft and he's basically got, 10 guys before his next pick?
Yeah.
If you don't think he's going to be there and you like him that much, go for it.
Well, I don't think he had seen the FDH draft board because, again, it's not posted publicly and won't be until the entire draft guide is out. I'm looking at Anthony's team. Anthony had him slotted 16th. Matt had him 25th. So the three of us that are going strongly or entirely off the FDH draft board, me, you, and Nate, we wouldn't have taken him before then. Anthony, it'll be kind of a coin flip, and to me that's something to keep an eye on, is whether Ty Dillon would have been the highest available guy for Anthony. He won't be in the third round, whether he would have been in the fourth round. That one there, kind of a gamble. The next one, much closer to value on the FDH draft board, I would say, as we start off the third round. Dale Earnhardt Jr. is the pick for Matt. And again, this is probably more or less where he's gone the last couple of years. He was ninth last year in UQB, and that was paced in large part by finishing ninth on the intermediate tracks last year, tied for third on the short tracks, not in the top 20 average finish for restrictor plate, super speedway, or road courses. Dale Earnhardt Jr. last year with the concussion issues, finishing 32nd. I actually had him last year, and that was one of the things that kept me from making a stronger run at this thing. He was 12th in 2015, 8th in 2014. So he's been a guy who's been right about in that range any number of years. And you go back to everything about Carl Edwards and the prodigy and the guy who was expected to be the guy. And we have some of the other guys we've talked about here, too, with Chase Elliott in terms of bloodlines and expectations. Nobody has ever had greater expectations based on bloodlines than Dale Earnhardt Jr. So when we talk about Carl Edwards' career as being kind of enigmatic, of he fell short of what he was supposed to be, but maybe not by much. If he had even one championship, he'd be pretty close to it. For Dale Earnhardt Jr., with all due respect, the gap between what he was thought to be when he started and where he's at right now is kind of wide.
It's huge. And here's the thing. We talked about this off the air as well. Can people live up to expectations?
Mm-hmm.
There is no way that Dale Earnhardt Jr. could have lived up to expectations, what people were thinking.
Right.
Impossible.
Right.
But he has fallen so far short.
Yeah.
Obviously, the problems with his stepmother.
Mm-hmm.
And having, but you go, you, when he first signed with Hendrick, everybody's like, okay, let me start counting the titles this guy's going to win.
Yeah, that was the thought.
And it never happened. It never came to fruition. And now, last year with the concussion, he missed so many races. He's saying all the right things this year. But my question is Dale Earnhardt Jr. going to finish out the year? And if he doesn't, how soon till he's an owner in NASCAR?
Could be. It depends on, and I have read some things where he's talked about how the concussion has.
Yeah, he got married.
Yeah, he got married, so his approach to things has kind of been a little bit kind of changed. And that's one of those things here, too, of like, if you get to the point, and a lot of times, and this happens with athletes, of where they can get to the point and they can accept what their career has been, because he's already at the point, and this is one of these things here too, where it's kind of deceiving as far as how we look at guys, and he'll always, in a lot of ways, be like the young guy who came in and whatever, and it's like, he's already at the point now where if he won it this year, which would be unlikely, or next year or whatever, then he's like the sentimental late career favorite guy who finally broke through. He was supposed to be the prodigy who'd win a bunch of them, and instead he's like Jim Plunkett winning the Super Bowl with the Raiders on the back nine of his career. I mean, it's just weird how it's deceiving how we think of people.
Yeah. Well, let me run this by you.
Yeah.
Hall of Famer, yes or no?
That's a good question. You have a better handle than I do. Because every sport sets the bar differently. Football is very punishing. Like, Art Monk didn't make it for the longest time where people were just like, what the hell's wrong with this? So it's like, I'm not as familiar with the bar for NASCAR as you are.
It's still relatively new. It's really in its infancy.
Okay. I mean, if it's a thing of where, if you're one of the top drivers of your generation, if that's the cutoff point, then you make it. But if it's like in football, it seems to be you better have been the elite of all time at your position. And if you weren't, good luck, buddy. No, he's not an elite all-time driver. He's one of the best of his generation. I'm going to guess that's probably the measuring stick, so I'm going to guess the answer is yes. What do you think?
I say yes, but I think it's because of his last name.
Could be. Well, and let's face it, too. There's a lot of showbiz stuff that goes with this stuff. NASCAR more so than the other sports as far as sort of being privately held and everything like that, as far as how important marketing is to it and the sponsorships and whatever. So you know what? If we're just looking at the realpolitik of money talks, that makes me even more convinced that you're right. Because from a business perspective, it's a no-brainer that he goes in the Hall of Fame. It just depends on how important is that consideration.
Yeah, or like I says, I honestly believe he's going to be an owner.
Yeah.
And he could go in as an owner.
He could. He very possibly. Wouldn't that be something?
Because
huh?
I really think he's got the smarts.
Yeah. Well, you know, and you talk about.
And the name Earnhardt's going to bring you money no matter what.
Right. And wouldn't that be something, too, that he joined the top team a couple of years ago as a driver, but wouldn't it be something if, like, he was always. Sometimes you get this with people in sports of they don't break through in the area that you expect, but it's like, what if he ends up becoming the top owner 10, 15 years from now and a dominant owner and everything like that? Wouldn't that be something? Like the guy who was supposed to do it as a driver may yet do it as an owner.
Yeah, same with Richard Childress.
Yeah, that's true.
So
that's true. You know, he could break through in that way. But Matt's got him here in this spot. Starting off the
That was some great talk, by the way. I really enjoyed that.
That was a nice little riff there. That's why I always enjoy doing these with you. Let's reset the top two rounds here as we go through. First round was Jimmy Johnson, Kyle Busch, Martin Truex Jr., Joey Logano, Kevin Harvick. Second round, Brad Keselowski, Matt Kenseth, Chase Elliott, Kurt Busch, Ty Dillon, Dale Earnhardt Jr. to start the third round. The only big surprise to this point, I think, Ty Dillon. Maybe a mild surprise with Anthony's two picks, but nothing in regards to the roll of the dice that Matt did with Ty Dillon. For as much as we've said with Jimmy Johnson in the first pick overall, somewhat boom or bust in the top spot. Ty Dillon way more so with the second spot. And a pick that is going to make or break his draft. I think that much is clear before he even rounds out with his last three picks. We come to you for the third round here, Mike. You've got the Busch brothers here. And you're going to have to go in a different direction here because I don't believe Mrs. Busch crapped out a third kid who's on the NASCAR circuit.
Well, Kyle's just had a baby, so.
This is not a keeper league.
Well, I think I may have to go with the defending Daytona 500 champion.
Okay.
Denny Hamlin.
Denny Hamlin. Always a guy who is in an interesting spot coming into
always.
A year.
Always. He's a boom or bust guy, you know. Everybody. There for years, he was the guy. He was the guy. He was the next guy to break through that glass ceiling and win the championship.
There's been a couple of these guys, and that I think when we look back at this historically, we will sort of finger them as the primary victims of Jimmy Johnson winning as many titles as he did, because there have been guys that have been frozen out because of that, and certainly I think you could make a case for Hamlin. In that group, the last 3 years, very consistent, 6th, 9th, and 3rd back over the last 3 years in terms of series finishes, and very consistent last year in terms of how he did. You're getting incredible recent consistency anyways for this pick. 7th on the intermediate courses last year, tied for 7th on restrictor plates, 5th on short tracks, 7th on super speedways, and 1st on the road courses last year. When you look at it, there were no holes in the game of Denny Hamlin.
No, you can say that about a lot of guys on Gibbs Racing.
Yeah.
They were all consistent.
Well, one less guy than we could have said it about at this time a year ago, as we just covered.
Yes, true.
But, yeah, I mean, Hamlin is a guy who, again, what are your thoughts on him being, I mean, not at this point a late career guy, but it's certainly at this point what we would consider a breakthrough guy if he wins the title. What would you think about that at this point?
See, right now I think there's less pressure on him because of who his teammates are.
Okay, could be.
And so that could make him, you know, and from what I understand about Gibbs, they all share information with each other, and none of it is begrudgingly. I hear with some of these teams, like, yeah, they'll give you the information, but not quite all of it.
Right.
So I hear that they're really open with their conversations with each other, and they help each other out. And, you know, again, is he a late bloomer? Possibly. And but like you say, I'm getting good value and a lot of consistency. He doesn't get the press that Matt Kenseth gets, because Kenseth does have a championship under his belt.
Right.
But his numbers are just as consistent.
Right. And that is certainly the case, because he is a guy who can get it done in a lot of different types of scenarios, and that is something that you have to place a lot of value on. The next pick that gets made is an interesting one here. Another young guy here for Anthony Patrone, and a pick where there's a decent amount of value to this one. We had him slotted 14th on our draft board. He had him slotted 8th. And interestingly enough, Matt Patrone had him slotted 13th, so he was a little closer to the FDH board. But Eric Jones is the pick, this young man, for Anthony Patrone. And not much to look at here as far as NASCAR history, at least at the major level. What I haven't referenced a whole lot to this point here, because our picks, we only have a couple picks that really strongly go against the consensus this year of our experts draft board that we do in all the sports, where we average out some of our leading peers in the industry. For him, that's really the only thing to kind of point to. He was tied for 14th on the experts draft board. We got him slotted 14th, so we're pretty much chalk. Anthony takes him 13th, so fairly uncontroversial, albeit, again, and this is one of the things about going off of a list, though, is that you do not have the ability to mix it up as you go. And I'm not going to compare his level of experience to Martin Truex Jr. and Chase Elliott, because they have more. Elliott by a smaller amount, to be sure. But three very young guys. When you're talking about boom or bust type teams, Anthony's already looking like that.
Yeah, he is. And man, very young, very inexperienced. I mean, yes, Truex has got more experience than, you know, Chase and Eric Jones probably do have together, but Anthony's set in his ways. He's very strong-willed.
Yes, he is.
So, and I like Anthony, so, I hope this all works out for him.
And you and I were...
I hope he finishes a solid second behind me.
We were referencing this off-air of an incident that, I can laugh about it now. But you talk about being strong-willed. It was either 2 or 3 years ago. He strongly disagreed with us having, I think we had Kyle Busch number one on our draft board, and he thought it should have been Harvick, because it was the year after Harvick won, so it would have been the 2015 board. And just berating me. We were at a group dinner before the Boku show at the Roxino here in town here. And me just like, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. And he's getting in my face. And it was just like very, very tense. So you talk about being set in his ways. I would have classified him as being a real a-hole on that occasion. But we love you, Anthony. That's, being passionate is something that a lot of us are as far as how we view these things. But Eric Jones is going to be his pick. I will not berate him for that. That's decent value.
That's where everybody has him slotted.
More or less. And my next pick, actually, it's funny because he was 10th on the experts draft board, 12th on the FDH draft board, and I'm getting him 14th. So this, by all measures, would be a value pick. Kyle Larson, who finished 9th a year ago, he was 10th in UQB, 13th on the intermediate tracks, 6th on the restrictor plate courses, 13th on short tracks, tied for 5th on super speedways, 20th on the road courses. Kyle Larson, a young guy who I am pairing with Kenseth and Logano. So I have one of the more diverse mixes thus far, I would say, of youth and experience.
Yeah.
But Larson is at the low end of the spectrum for me for experience, but I think has a good amount of upside here in the late third round, if I do say so myself.
Am I allowed to pun here, right?
Go ahead.
That's grand larceny right there.
Nice! So you agree with that, then?
Yeah.
You think it's good value?
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
All right. What are some of the things you like about his game?
I like it. This is his third year racing with the big boys, and, he's learned a lot. And it takes, the first year, a lot of people aren't going to work with you.
Right.
Even sometimes your own teammates are. You got that yellow stripe along your back bumper, and people see that and they get nervous.
Right.
Okay. He came close a couple of times to getting his first win. Here's my strong. I'm going to tell you right now.
Okay.
You're going to get at least one win out of Kyle Larson.
Okay. That wouldn't surprise me.
There's not going on much of a limb there, but there's my guarantee for you.
Okay.
And if you can get a win out of your was he fourth round pick?
Third round pick.
For a third round pick, you're going to get a win. That means one win, you're most likely in the chase.
You would think so.
No, you're. I mean,
yeah. Well, that's right. That's right. It's automatic. That's right. Yeah. I mean, I'm just. You know, my first instinct is to say, well, that would give me a good chance. But you're absolutely right. It would be automatic at that point.
Right. And if you can get that out of a third round pick, cause, I mean, you expect it out of the first and second round. Let's
you
see.
Do.
You expect once you get to the third round, it's kind of sketchy.
It is. It is. But, yeah, to be able to get that in the third round with the upside that he has, I am happy.